Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Return of the Chiron by R.K. Lander, narrated by Gary Bennett. Chapter 1. Staying Alive. Lineal Era Eridan, Lestari, legendary healer from Ia-Ur-E, hers was the mind behind the Junar, first antidote of its kind to combat hybrid poisons, amongst them that of the Nimuan. She saved Felna of Lantaria's life once. Could she do it again? Not with potions and infusions, but with a balm that can only be used on the soul, that cannot be touched, only felt? The elusive balm of love remembered? Journals, Lieutenant Falkite Tensari. Lineal's eyes were filled with the glaring light of a new world, but her soul was dark like wet soil, like poisoned blood. The afternoon sun was so bright she could hardly make out the colors of the sea-swept world in which she had been sailing for nearly 2 weeks. A salty breeze blew into her, clothes flapping behind and around her, strands of loosened hair snaking about a sun-kissed face that felt dry and tight from too much sun and salt. She'd come from the desert, traveled to Galarath, then Port Gallo, taken a northward-bound ship to the Blessed Isle, to Estuary, the final port, end of the short road, doorway of the dead. She'd hardly spoken to anyone save to procure food, not for pleasure but to stay alive. She didn't care if her bread was riddled with weevils, if the cheese was rancid or the water stale. She just needed to keep breathing so that she could find Talanor, and then, every time her mind brought her to this moment, which was often, it would stutter and grind to a halt. What would she do when she found him? Found them? She closed her eyes, squeezed them tightly shut, forced herself to push past the barrier in her mind. But it wouldn't let her, for to drop that shield would be to hope. Hope that Talanor had found himself, that he was happy once more and that he would recognize her, still love her, even though she had failed him. She dared not force that door open, see behind it, wonder if Felinar was close, and yet pray that he wasn't, for how could she face him after what she'd done? Or, rather, what she hadn't. Her eyes flew open, no longer dry but swimming in misery and self-loathing, because the mere mention of him was enough to remember the things she had tried so hard to forget. That day in the forest, when her world, quite suddenly, made no sense at all. Hope? There was none for mothers like her, mothers who failed to protect their children. She had stood paralyzed before panic had taken her, and she had struggled to break free from her daughter's iron clutch. But her pathetic attempts to free herself from Aralas and run to them had been useless. And so she had watched as Sandlords killed her heart, her soul. First Talanor, and then Felina, as he threw away his precious life, thinking he could save his son. He had not. She had always known Felina would die before her, warrior that he was. But she had always imagined he would lose his life on the battlefield, that he would march away to war and never come back. Instead, it had happened on a lazy morning, an unexpected incursion from a patrol of Sandlords that had strayed too far south. Here, in Nazaran, they called them Calrasians. She swiped at her eyes, smoothed back a strand of hair that had struck across her cheek, and took a calming breath. This was her life now. She was getting used to it, crying, then chiding herself, resolving to stay alive, even though half of her heart had been ripped out, the agony of it almost unbearable. Just a few more days, the captain had said, and stubborn hope stirred in her heavy chest once more. She quelled it, as ruthlessly as she always did, ever since she had set foot on the long road, leaving Ua-Ur-E, crossing the entirety of Beleran, in search of Talanor and Felina. If by some miracle she did find them, what would she say? What would she feel? Could she ever look them in the eye, tell them that she'd love them beyond life? Even though the sight of them would conjure torment, be a constant reminder of the tragedy they had all endured? How could she ever separate the love she held for them from the agony of their loss? She didn't know if she could. All she did know was that Talonor needed her. And so, wherever he was, so would she be, no matter it would tear her to pieces. Flesh struck flesh, the smack echoing around the large underground hall. The ropes that held Ezra's arms aloft wavered from the force of the blow, their brittle fibers chafing his wrists. He splayed his fingers, all of them except one which was stiff, the angle of it wrong. He closed his eyes, waited for the sting to subside, but instead a sharp blow to the gut drove all the breath from his lungs. He was suddenly free of his constraints, and he crumpled to the floor, waiting for the moment his lungs would function again, trying not to panic when they didn't. He could hear his own pathetic attempts to draw air into his body, saw boots just in front of his face. He braced for impact, but it never came. Instead, just as he drew in a labored breath, a face appeared before his doubled-over form. Bright green eyes gleamed in the half-dark, the mark of revenants just above them, framed by the flawless face of a revenant warrior. To look at him, one would never guess at his cruelty, the cruel detachment with which he meted out suffering.
"Where is the elf bird? Tell me where your crow painter is."
The voice seemed almost whimsical, like a kindly teacher, and Ezra lifted his heavy head, blinking in a futile attempt to clear his blurry vision.
"I don't know."
The beautiful face was gone, and in its place, a black object hurtled towards him until it blocked his vision and pain exploded in his head. Sometime later, he slowly opened his eyes and took a moment to orient himself. The ropes were still hanging overhead, no longer swaying, but utterly still. There was no soft breathing at his side, no footsteps, no soft laughter or taunting words. All he could hear was the soothing sound of dripping water, its echo high above him. He opened his dry lips, wishing the dripping water was directly overhead, so that he could quench his terrible thirst, so that it would wash over him, cool his burning skin. But the throbbing ache in his leg made him feel sick, and he daren't move in case he jarred it. They would, though, when they came back to continue his torment. Sijon was just beyond his locked door, somewhere down this same corridor, suffering the same torture as he was. He knew because he'd heard him. Arzen's minions made sure of that. Still, at least he knew that Sijon was alive, although he probably wished that he wasn't. But what of Manon? If he hadn't escaped, he would be dead. So many days without cross-fleshing would have driven him to starvation, amongst other, even more unsavory consequences. Strangely, he realized that he cared about the Rhodite's fate, something he'd never done in Orgenta. All he'd cared about was himself. His heavy head pounded in time with his heart, and he told himself one more time that he would never answer their question. Squaria Ezra had been called many names in both of his lives, by Felda, amongst others. But traitor was not one of them. He would never disclose the whereabouts of the Alesta Korvax. To do so would be to doom the Order of Shiron to oblivion, earn himself the wrath of gods. He screwed his eyes shut, rode the waves of deep aching that shot from his leg into the base of his skull. Only now, in this hell pit of anguish and suffering, did he realize just how painful his life in Orgenta had been. Here he lay with a broken leg, a twisted finger, and a body full of bruises, burns, and cuts. And yet these physical wounds were nothing compared to the lonely life he had led until just recently. In the city of the Chiron, no one except Sijon had seen his wounds, the ones that scarred his mind. His friend had kept him sane, and the gods only knew how he'd put up with him. Felda had been the catalyst for change, for good and for bad. Slowly they'd come to understand each other, only for war to get in the way of their journey from enemies to companions. But was it enough for Felda to care what happened to Ezra? Enough for him to come back and help him get Sijon out of here? Would Felda risk his life for the one who had made his already miserable existence even more unbearable? One way or the other, Ezra had something to live for now. He had Sijon, the promise of friendship with Feldar, and the tentative hope of love that lapped softly upon the shores of his conscience. He'd always admired Galara Quinn, never admitted to such a thing, even to himself. An image formed in his hurting mind, a skew-whiff smile and confident blue eyes. And then there was Commander Ortolan. He would be furious with Ezra for inadvertently running too far, past the point of return and into the enemy's range of fire. They hadn't killed him, but captured him. And now, for reasons he had yet to understand, Arzen wanted the Alesta Korvax, the key painter, wielder of liminality, etcher of magic. Did he think she would paint him a key? Did he think he would cross the source and into Beleran? Back to his home world? Well, he couldn't. He wasn't Shiran. He was Revenant. Ezra told himself it was impossible. And yet the demigod had magic, powers they had yet to understand. Who was to say Arzen wouldn't find a way to go back, given time? One thing Ezra did know. The demigod feared Xayanar because somehow his brother Squaria's blue fire could undo Revenants, or so it had seemed to him at the time. Ezra had heard the guards talking about it when they had thought him unconscious, about the Grey Ones, former Revenants who had been touched by Xayanar's light and had shriveled but not died. He knew the guiding light had been released, but were those poor souls still immortal like deviants? Doomed to rot away in life? He didn't know, wondered whether anyone did. He shifted, groaned, told himself he should try to sleep, but pain and regret were throbbing in his head. Ezra had walked into the hands of Nazaran's greatest enemy, given him an unexpected boon, a chance to possess a war dragon. Ezra frowned, looked at the wall but didn't see it. Perhaps there was a way to undo the damage he'd done. Arzen wanted the Alesta Korvax, but he also wanted a Shiran, and what better liminal was there for him to possess than a Squaria? Yes, the demigod would continue to torture him, but he wouldn't kill him, which was more than he could say about Sijon. What if Ezra could give Arzen hope that he would serve him, make him indispensable so that their captor wouldn't kill Sijon, even free him? And then, perhaps Ezra could destroy Arzen in the only way he could, from the inside. His head was pounding in pain and frustration. He was close to desperation, and he forced himself to turn from it. In his mind, he conjured the forest of Iaure in deep winter. In a small glade, a wolf sat placid, her thick gray coat, coal and white mantle, speckled with snow she did not bother to shake off. She seemed happy there, enjoying the silence of her world, basking in its unequaled beauty, watching it through the wise blue eyes of an animal, allowing creation to warm her. He smiled from where he imagined himself, sitting on a low-hanging branch, watching her unblinking, vigilant eyes. His heart slowed, and the pain from these last days of torture faded. He closed his eyes, breathed in, not the dank smell of mold and stagnant water from far beneath Fort Arliss, but the fresh smell of eucalyptus and pine, the snow-kissed forests of Orendor, where Galara Quinn reigned queen, and Ezra was once more Tanakai. Zadah, rightful heir of Fort Arliss, smoothed a hand down her satin and velvet robes, checked the pile of hair upon her head, was perfectly folded, knotted, curled, and clipped, then took a deep breath. Reaching for the door, she turned the knob and slowly pulled. Standing before the princess was a warrior, her face placid, skin flawless save for the black mark that decorated her forehead, its triangular shape showcased by the design of her helm. "The High Lord Arzen requires your presence in the throne room. I have come to accompany you, Zadah." Zadah bristled at the lack of respect. She was tempted to give the Revenant warrior a mouthful, but there was something ambiguous about her. She was so placid, seemed so peaceful, and yet there was detachment too, a stony lack of empathy that Zadar rather thought made her capable of anything. The two women set off along the corridor that led to the grand stairwell and downwards. She was free at last, after days of uncertainty in which she had not been allowed to leave her rooms. Guards had stood at her door day and night, had delivered food and water, asked if she had needed anything, to which she had said only her freedom. But they had bowed and closed the door once more. She'd spent that time looking out of her window, which sat at the rear of the royal palace of Fort Arliss. She could see its empty gardens, and beyond, the great walls, not her father's guards atop the battlements, but Arzen's beige and red-decked revenants. She wished she could see the other side of the palace, the area which looked out over the main courtyard and the gates that led to the desert. She needed to know what was happening, whether she had been right to join her lover, Commander Dariot, by betraying her own father, the king. The revenant warrior led her down the wide stairs, not a lord or lady in sight, only other warriors who looked at her side-on. What were they thinking? Did they pity her for her mortality? Did they know something she didn't? What did Arzen want of her? Zadar suppressed a shiver, the pang of anxiety that threatened to steal her breath, and walked on. Reaching the ground floor, they continued through the open doors, the horned helms of the guards twisting high over their heads, casting warped shadows on the walls beside them. The sight was so foreign, so far removed from her life of just days ago. She reminded herself that she had wanted this, that she had betrayed her own father for all this. Soothing down her stately robes, she stood proud, lying eyes confident. But on the inside, there was a churning vortex of doubt and anxiety, twisting ever faster the closer she came to the throne. She had not seen her father, hadn't even seen Dariot. She had seen Arzen briefly from a distance, before she had been ushered away to her rooms after the battle. Now, as she approached, dread threatened to rock her off her feet. The revenant demigod sat imperiously on her father's throne, and she pushed away the outrage, reminded herself that she had lied and manipulated, all but opened the gates to Arzen herself. She searched the room for her father, felt stupid for it, but she needed to tell him that it was all right, that Arzen would not harm them, that she had been right to betray him, that he too would see it in the end. To look at, Arzen was magnificent in his darkness, beautiful even. She could well have mistaken him for an elf had it not been for the black crystal decorating the center of his forehead. Upon his head was a crown of gold, two carved horns twisting skywards, making him look like a giant. The ornate carvings hugged his face, snaked around his pointed ears, down his neck and back. He was indeed a god to look upon, and his mere presence instilled in Zadar the need to run, to kneel before him, to obey his every order. She fought the feeling, for she was a princess, had not been raised to obey, but to be obeyed. At Arzen's side, a burly warrior decked a lord stood utterly still, gaze lost to the horizon, hand resting on the pommel of his sword. On the other side, a man she knew well, Commander Dariot, stared back at her, expression unreadable, even to the woman who had shared his bed for so long. The dread was back, and she schooled her face in a way few could. Arzen's heavy gaze was upon her, his shocking violet eyes roving over her body, down it, but whatever he saw did not seem to evoke the slightest emotion in him. Cold as marble, stare unwavering, he stood, his golden mantle falling around him with a soft swish, and as he walked elegantly towards her, Zadar saw wispy tendrils of blue mist, which disappeared no sooner than he stopped before her. "Zadar, daughter of Josiah, it is my pleasure to meet you." He stood watching her, as if he had put before her a test, one she dared not fail. In her calmest, steadiest voice she could manage, she answered him, "Lord Arzen of Arzenon." Arzen seemed to grow taller for a moment, and a gleam came to his eye. "Of Arzenon and Fort Arzen." Hers was a mental flinch, but then what had she expected? She had always known he would take her father's throne, had told herself he would be magnanimous, that he would not dare kill the ruling house of Arlis. She still held to that, for Jezai had been a good king, and Arzen in his nascent reign would not dare push her people to rebellion. Dariot had agreed with her, had wanted revenants as much as she had. Her gaze flitted to him, still standing by the vacated throne, no longer looking at her. For the first time, she saw the insignia of his rank. He'd been demoted to captain.
"Well, have you nothing to say about my ascension, Zedah?"
Her answer needed to be honest, because something in the demigod's eyes warned her that he would accept no less. "I confess I am worried for my father's well-being. He did not want alliance with Arzanon. I did." Arzan walked around her, hands clasped tightly behind his back.
"Yes, so Captain Dariot tells me. As for your father, he is well, although visiting him is not a good idea just yet. The city is secure, and we are stabilizing the nation, village by village. Tell me, Zedah, what was your function in this court?"
"I am, was, princess. As such, it was my duty to ensure the correct running of this palace, and to second my father's wishes in whichever way he saw fit." Arza nodded, came full circle, and stopped before her, almost too close for her to focus on him.
"You will continue to carry out those duties, although it will be my wishes you must second, whichever way I see fit. Is this something you can commit to, Zedah?"
The answer was obvious. Even if she couldn't, she would never risk saying so. Arzen's words about her father were a clear threat, one she'd understood perfectly. She tried to catch Dariot's gaze once more, but he would not look at her. She turned back to Arzen.
"I can. But tell me, how should I address you?"
"Your Grace, High Lord."
Zedah dipped her head in the way of a bow, and Arzen watched her, expression blank. Quite unexpectedly, he leaned forward and whispered just before her mouth,
"Kneel before your new master, Zedah."
She could feel his hot breath on her lips, and even though he had nothing more to say, he did not move away. She knelt and bowed her head, knowing Arzen would be looking down on her, satisfied by her submission, she hoped. She could see the tips of his pointed boots, the filigree around them, the swirling pattern that continued along the sides and upwards, past the decorated hem of his long tunic.
"Rise, a lady, Zedah."
As she straightened her knees, her eyes following the length of her new ruler, past the gem-studded belt and to his face, so beautiful, so unreadable. He had humiliated her, and although he showed no emotion, she sensed his enjoyment.
"You shall have what you most desire. Obey me, and I will make you eternal. Deceive me, and I will kill you before your people. Hang, draw, and quarter you, as a message. Arzen brings revenants, and his price is devotion. His demand is loyalty. His order is obeisance. Do you understand me, Lady Zedah?"
She had not been able to control her eyes. She could feel them wide and too full. She had lost control over her expression at some point, but she was too fearful to care right now. Only one word pushed past her lips.
"Yes."
There was humor in Arzen's gaze, but Zedah didn't care. All she wanted was for him to step away from her. His aura was heavy, commanding, almost too much for her human body to endure.
"You will seal your pact with me this evening. I will send for you."
Arzen's purple eyes turned away mercifully, and before she knew it, the same warrior who had brought her here was leading her away, back to her rooms.
"I will come for you at the 8th hour.
The warrior made to leave, but hesitated, turned back to Zedah.
"I am happy for you, my lady. Soon you will belong to Revenants."
She had dreamt of this moment for years, almost thanked the warrior for her words. She looked into her bright brown eyes, thought she looked kind in a commanding sort of way. A soft smile played about the woman's lips, Not amusement, but pride, perhaps. Zadar watched her leave, knowing she was a prisoner once more, until the demigod graced her with a touch of a Telzaran. She thought back to the way Arzen had looked at her, wondered whether there would be a price to pay for her immortality beyond loyalty. She forced herself to push past that fear. After all, as a princess, her destiny had always been bound to some man, an influential lord to perpetuate her line. Now that would no longer be necessary. She would perpetuate it herself by living forever. She should have been ecstatic, and yet she could not find it within herself to be happy. Her father was a captive of Arzen. Her people, the entire court, was missing. Were they, too, under house arrest? And what of the servants, the townsfolk? Had Arzen imposed a curfew of some kind? Was that why she had seen no one on her way to the throne room? At least she'd seen Dariot, but he had struggled to meet her gaze. He had lost his command, surely suspected Arzen would do more than grace Zadar with revenance. Did he, too, regret what he had done? She sat heavily at her dressing table, focused on a reflection in the mirror. It made sense that Arzen would be cautious with her father. He had many loyal subjects, could still instigate an insurgence. Arzen surely wouldn't provoke them by killing their one-time king. But then was the opposite not also true? Arzen could make the ultimate example of Josiah, an unequivocal message to his new kingdom to obey his every wish. Her father had always told her there was a price to immortality, and she had always made light of it. Now, as a heavy weight of worry and uncertainty turned in her guts, she wondered if she should not have listened more closely, whether she should have given her father credit, despite his age, his unreasonable attachment to tradition and custom. Zadar wanted to live forever, not to die as her mother had, withering away as her grandmother had. Now all she had to do was swim with the tides, and her greatest desire would be fulfilled. Perpetuity, immortality, eternal beauty. Arzen wouldn't kill her father, her lover, her friends, not while she, princess of Fort Arliss, gave the demigod what he wanted. She huffed a humorless laugh, turned away from the mirror, for therein lay the problem. She'd never been one to obey. A deep breath, a mental nod to herself, and she bolstered her courage. She would deck herself a princess, cool and beautiful, irresistible. She would use her charms, enchant a demigod, make herself indispensable to him, for that would be her only weapon. Then she would seek out her father, calm his worries, tell him that Arzen would never kill him so long as she was important to him. It was a good plan. Still, all she felt was dread and a growing sense of displacement. Feldar held his longsword in both hands, the muscles in his arms straining as they held the blade aloft, perfectly still, as only a calm master could achieve. As for Benzir's blade, his wavered slightly, sometimes higher, sometimes lower than Feldar's. A harsh intake of breath, Feldar blew out slowly as he moved, blade slashing downwards, sideways, and then jabbing forward in three perfectly measured strides. Benzir finished somewhere behind him, not quite where he should be. The journey home from Tarmandin to Orgenta had been quiet, introspective, laden with anxiety for the consequences of the Alliance's failure to stop Arzen's advance into Fort Arliss. The fates of Sijon and Ezra were uncertain, a cause of grief and anxiety from what they may be enduring. And then Manon would not wake from his deep slumber, as yet unable to undo the damage that so many days without cross-fleshing had done. They'd met humans, hybrids, and elves along the way, caravans of them heading north to Sheandar or Boscandia. They told the stories of a great battle, of a scarring of the land, of some new power they said had risen from the ranks of the Shiran. Commander Ordelan had answered their questions as best he could, warned them of the dangers in and around Fort Arliss, and that a siege or perhaps another battle was imminent. Turbulent times, he'd told them, and Feldar couldn't agree more. They had arrived 2 days ago, and Orgenta was just as it had always been. And why wouldn't it be? Asked Feldar. They'd only been away for a few weeks, and yet it felt like a decade since he'd flown to war with Renor upon his back. Each had wielded their own light, Renur in the shape of a blue beam that could hold a warrior fast, throw her back, kill if she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?